however, had a flawless ambush record since those days. Well, almost flawless. She grabbed her arm that had been grazed by Lucas's bullet early. Blood still trickled out of the wound. You'll live. I'm sure you're thrilled. Speaking of, why exactly am I still alive? Lucas stared at his knife, still flittering through his fingers. He had been wondering the same thing. I don't know. My friend seems intent on keeping you breathing for some reason. He's quite adamant about it. He pointed to the scratch over his eye. How long have you two been working on this little science project? And do you have any bread to go along with that wine? She motioned toward the cylinder. I just got here today, and I haven't sorted out that second issue yet. And you haven't eaten him? What the hell are you waiting for? Those things are like a 7-course meal. Go take that fancy rifle of yours. Do it now, and we can split him between us. Believe me, the idea crossed my mind. But look around you. Look at all this. He motioned to the humming controls and radiant lights. Who knows what else he can do with it? Yeah, she paused. It is something. Apparently he's a scientist, and he got in a bit of trouble by betraying his own race before they all left without him. He pointed to the decaying hand on the floor. The woman's eyes widened. That thing was his? And wait, you can talk to it?
It understands me somehow, but I haven't been able to process what he's been grunting yet. He does seem to have mastered basic human body language, though, so his nodding and pointing helps. Right now he's working on a part of the ship that I think is supposed to act as some sort of translator.
I need to eat, she said. It's been days.
I can drag in your two friends from outside if you'd like a snack. The woman scoffed.
I never went down that road. I saw how much it messes with your mind, and you need to be sharp, not just nourished, to survive out here. Those two would be the prime examples of the dangers of man-eating. Now that was something I did know something about in a former life. Metaphorically, of course.
Lucas's eyes narrowed. What's your name? The door behind them opened, and the scientist was standing there holding a small device with his good claw.
Holy shit, the woman exclaimed, and instinctively started scrambling backward, but she was already against the wall.
Lucas stood up. Believe me, you don't have anything to worry about. He's the only reason you're not laying out there in the dust with your pals.
The scientist walked into the cell with a handheld device. He held it up to the woman. A bright light scanned over the surface of her face, and it let out a high-pitched whine. What the hell is he doing? She asked, turning her head so it was flush with the wall.
I have no idea, but I would recommend sitting still.
The creature grunted in agreement. He flipped over the piece of machinery and held it up to her wounded arm. Gel shot out of it like a caulk gun, covering her wound. It hissed and started smoking, and the woman looked shocked. But in a few seconds it was over. The wound had regrown skin and the bleeding had completely ceased. Lucas was stunned. You come here with that kind of technology, and you choose to share your antimatter bombs instead? The creature said nothing. Lucas continued. Can I get some of that? You did some damage to me earlier. He brought a finger to the scratch over his eye. The creature bent down to look the wound over and then shook his head. He held up two claws and put them close together to make what appeared to be a little symbol and scoffed. The woman spoke from the floor. I think that's alien for it. It's just a scratch. The scientist walked through the door and motioned for Lucas to follow. He did so, but first went through the cell, scooping up the spike, the switchblade, and the grenade the woman had unloaded. As the two exited through the doorway, she called out after them. What, I have to stay here? You said he liked me. Lucas answered without turning.
I said he wanted you alive. And you have tried to kill both of us in the last hour.
The door slammed shut behind them. Back on the bridge, the creature returned to work on the console, which was still spitting out sparks every few seconds, as were many other stations around the room. Lucas wondered if the ship was in fact operational, as it looked like, well, like it had been through an intergalactic war. He slumped down to the floor next to the woman's pack he had brought in from the desert. If he was lucky, he'd find some rogue scraps of food. She hadn't looked all that decrepit, so clearly she was eating something. He dumped out the contents of the bag, and a host of objects fell out with a clamor that made the creature stop and look at him.
He shook it, and another grenade fell out and started rolling down the tilted floor.
Shit, 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 Lucas exclaimed as he lunged for it. How many of these things did she have?
Thankfully, the pin was still in place. The biggest noisemaker was the cacophony from about 30 45-millimeter shells hitting the floor. He took her magnum from the back of his pants and opened it. 5 shots remained. He replaced a single bullet and kept digging. He turned up a hatchet with dried blood on it, a few books of matches, and a copy of Paradise Lost with the edges singed. He flipped through the pages until he found a bookmark near the end, a photo, creased and partially burned, but he could make out the woman wrapped in the arms of a man. It was readily apparent that before the war she had been stunning. The photo showed her in full makeup, with her dark hair voluminous and curled at the ends. The image was the most breathtaking thing Lucas had seen since the million gallons of water sitting below him. The man behind her was young, with blue eyes and a wide smile. She grasped his wrist with her hand, and he could make out a large diamond ring on her finger. A fiancé? Husband? Even the she-devil, snarling with rage and loaded with weapons, had lost someone. Everyone had. Lucas put the picture back and turned his attention to what appeared to be a silk dress folded around something. Not much occasion for such clothes these days, but he supposed it must have been in her honeypot wardrobe back when that was still a viable tactic. He picked it up and immediately felt something hard inside. Recognizing the shape, Lucas could hardly contain his excitement as he whipped the dress open. Cans flung out of it and clanged on the floor. Lucas scrambled to keep all of them from rolling away, but 2 escaped his grip and were sent tumbling down the slanted floor. The creature was on his back, fiddling with a new tool on the underside of the console. 1 came to rest on his hip, which caused him to look down in surprise. He flung out his arm to catch the other one rolling his way. Lucas looked over at him as he grabbed the other can and rose up from the floor. He looked at Lucas, then back at the canned tuna fish in his hand. Tearing the top off hungrily, he threw it back like a shot into his open mouth. Looking supremely satisfied, he turned back to Lucas and flung the remaining can at him. Lucas caught it and opened it quickly. He scooped out the fish with his fingers and licked the insides when he couldn't scrape any more out of it. Looking down at the other cans, he saw pears, peaches, olives, salmon, and more tuna. There were about 12 cans in all, more than he'd seen in one place for months. As much as he despised the woman, he was now exceptionally thankful for her resourcefulness. A can of tuna in 45 seconds was not good enough rationing, and his stomach immediately began to regret his sudden indulgence. But he kept himself in check and managed not to coat the floor with his recently consumed meal, unlike he'd done with the water. He folded the cans back up into the dress and began scooping the floor's items into the pack. All around him, multicolored lights glowed softly. There was no telling what time it was in the buried craft, but Lucas's body told him night had come hours ago. In a world where he routinely faced death and desolation, the day had gone above and beyond in every way, and so he drifted into unconsciousness on the floor of an alien spacecraft.
Chapter 4. Lucas stirred back into consciousness when he was lightly kicked by a clawed foot.
"Awake!"
a mechanical, grizzled voice said. He jolted up and instinctively reached for Natalie, slung around his back. Pointing it up at the creature who loomed above him, he did a mental double-take.
"Did you just say something?"
The creature now had a sort of collar around his neck. It was metal, with a bit that wrapped up and around his throat. A small blue hologram protruded slightly from the front of it.
"Yes."
Lucas jumped to his feet, dropping the gun to his side.
"You did it. You fixed your translator." "I was able to repair the console to a degree where it allowed me to program my..."
The voice became a garbled mess of sounds.
"Your what?" "You humans do not have a word for it. It takes certain psionic brainwaves and translates them into audible speech, though sometimes it cannot translate something for which your language does not have an equivalent term."
The creature was indeed talking without moving his mouth and was only grunting occasionally. His new voice was metallic and deep, but not without inflection or even emotion. It was a welcome change from growling and pointing, and suddenly the creature was feeling less like a creature and more like a man. It was as if a gorilla suddenly opened his mouth and was telling you about his day. Well, this makes things easier. But how have you been able to understand me this whole time?
I am able to process your language mentally, but my biology does not allow me to speak it, just as you could never vocalize my native tongue. I studied all the languages of your Earth intensely in preparation for our mission here. It allowed us to learn of your culture before we arrived, and it was key for intercepting transmissions between your leaders. It would also have been useful for interrogation of prisoners, but that was never an authorized command, only extermination. Speaking the language was never a necessity, but this was a device I had been working on in my spare time, and I am glad to see it is functioning properly. Is my grasp of your language understandable?
Lucas slowly nodded his head, which was internally spinning. This might be the first face-to-face conversation that had ever taken place between a creature and a human. There were so many questions, his brain felt like it was about to implode in on itself. He spat out the first one that came to mind. Why did you come here? The alien looked out the black view screen.
Why we always come. To conquer, to pillage, to strip your planet bare, to fuel our war.
Your war? The war against Earth? The alien paused.
I did not say our war was with you.
Lucas opened his mouth to further investigate, but was stopped short.
I know you have many questions, and there will be time for answers, but we have a more pressing matter to attend to. We need to retrieve the... from the...
Didn't catch most of that. What are you talking about?
First, we need the female.
He turned to walk out the main door toward the prison wing.
Wait, what am I supposed to call you?
The creature turned.
I am known as... But for simplicity's sake, you may refer to me as Alpha. And what are you called?
Lucas. Alpha nodded in acknowledgement.
Come, there is much to do.
Whoa, wait, that thing can talk now? The woman was awake and stunned at the new development.
I could always speak, now you can simply understand me.
Lucas kept Natalie trained on her. She seemed in better spirits now that the hole in her arm had been sealed. Her wrist was red from the cuff, but he imagined she was still quite some time away from chewing her own hand off. Alpha approached her slowly.
Hey, back up, what are you doing?
Lucas exclaimed as he twitched nervously.
You're not letting her go, are you? She's incredibly dangerous. Yesterday I was where you're standing right now and she almost took my eye out.
Alpha glanced back.
You removed her weapons, did you not?
Yeah, but
there is no time to waste. She is essential to what we must do.
The woman stopped squirming as Alpha examined her arm.
Wait, what?
She is in fair health. However, she needs nourishment.
He stood up and went over to the console outside the broken force field. The cuff slid off of her and her arm dropped limply to her side. She rubbed her wrist and slowly got to her feet. Lucas took a step back and pointed Natalie at her chest.
Relax, I'm done fighting. Just get me some damn food. I know you found it in my bag. I killed 8 people to amass that stash, and I'll be damned if I'm going to let you two eat it all.
She pointed at Alpha.
I know what tuna fish smells like, asshole.
Alpha was nonplussed.
Come.
The trio exited the room, Lucas letting the lady go first, not out of respect, but so she wouldn't yank the revolver out of his belt and blow his brains all over the extraterrestrial hallway. She obliged, and they turned toward the lift to the bridge. As the door opened, she saw her pack leaning against the holo table. She raced over and ripped it open. Lucas had a sudden thought and sprinted over to catch her, but by the time he got there, it wasn't an axe or a grenade she pulled out, but the can of peaches.
He stopped abruptly.
"What's your problem?" she asked as she opened the can and threw a slice in her mouth. Lucas bent down and picked up the rest of the pack. He opened it, fished around, and pulled out the axe and grenades. He slid the former into his belt and the latter into his pockets.
"Keep him, but I want my gun back," Lucas laughed.
"Yeah, okay."
Alpha was playing with some controls on the holotable. They were zooming around the globe, focusing in on various points that were all flashing red. Finally, it came to rest on a green dot that wasn't pulsating at all. It looked to be in...
"So what the hell is going on?" the woman cut in.
He was really going to have to learn her name at some point. Alpha looked up from the table and slowly walked around to their side.
"Your planet is dying. That much should be obvious to you by now. Scans indicate that there are still inhabitable regions to the north and far south of our present location, but within 6 months' time, those will be desolate as well. Your atmosphere is corroding, your planet's temperature is rising, and it will be unable to sustain any life at all within a year's time."
Lucas leaned up against the table.
"Yeah, that's what I figured."
The woman was uncharacteristically silent. Lucas pressed.
"So what are you proposing?"
With the acquisition of this functional energy source, the ship is now mostly operational. Some systems remained damaged, but the engines and life support are online. As is water filtration, which I fixed long ago, and intership communications, which I brought online last night when I programmed this translator.
Alpha turned back to the holotable, which zoomed out from Earth to the solar system, and then further out to a star cluster.
"With current functionality, we only have enough power to get to these neighboring star systems, none of which are inhabited, and few possess planets that could even theoretically sustain life. This is a class ship, and it's lacking the capabilities of a class."
"Your translator appears to be on the fritz there," the woman chimed in.
"These words do not exist here. This ship is a smaller vessel, not suited for long-range travel. A larger ship has these capabilities, but all of that class have been destroyed in our civilization's battle. Also, those ships have crews of thousands and would be impossible to fly without a hugely coordinated effort. From what I have seen, such a thing no longer exists."
He swiped the hologram, which turned into a three-dimensional model of the ship.
"This is a lower class of craft, but still requires a basic crew to function. Normally, there would be at least 20 on board operating the ship at all times, with 100 soldiers for transport. My calculations put the absolute minimum number of bodies needed to operate the ship in its current state at 3. I thought this a lost cause, as I have seen what the world has turned both my and your people into, and was planning on attempting to make the trip alone with bypassed automated systems attempting to handle the load. I would have certainly failed."
Different parts of the holographic ship lit up and were marked with symbols Lucas couldn't decipher.
"I believe the two of you could perform the necessary functions to mobilize the ship and acquire the remaining part needed for long-range travel. That is why I kept her alive, and that is why I did not kill you when you slept."
Lucas was stunned. "You want us to fly this ship?" The woman was equally skeptical.
"And to where? Long-range travel? What does that mean? Where are you trying to go?"
Alpha swirled the hologram around so it zoomed back in on the green dot.
"Our ultimate destination I will discuss later. We do not have time at the moment. The we need is halfway around the world and is quickly becoming incapacitated."
Lucas was confused.
"The what? I can't understand what you're talking about. What is this thing?"
It is a core for the larger vessels that allows them to travel long distances, across star clusters, across the galaxy. It is not meant to be fitted to a vessel as small as this one, but I believe I can modify the ship so it will be able to house and use the core safely. That is part of what I have been working on in solitude all this time. All I need now is the core itself. I was unable to acquire one until I found a power source that would allow the ship to fly locally. I have now located the last remaining active core on Earth, but it will not remain operational for much longer, as it is degrading at an exponential rate. This is the need for urgency. So where is it? Lucas asked. Alpha summoned the rotating globe once more, and it zoomed to a point in Scandinavia. The device is located in a class ship that was partially destroyed in the region you once knew as Norway. Readings indicate that the area in which it is located, while devoid of water, still has habitable temperatures, and the vessel has at least 28% of its systems online, including the object we require. The woman interjected.
You want us to fly this thing to Norway? How exactly is that going to work? We're buried in a mountain, and also, I can't speak for him, but I've no idea what any symbol in this room says, nor how to use them to make this thing move.
Lucas said nothing, but was thinking the same thing. He glanced around the room, bristling with foreign devices, and couldn't begin to process how he would be able to meaningfully contribute to such a mission.
It is difficult, but possible, Alpha insisted. We have 34 hours to reach the device before it degrades to the point of uselessness. In that time, you will learn what you need to comprehend about this vessel to get our party there.
Lucas was incredulous. You're telling me we can learn to operate this thing in a day and a half?
You will need to do so in 29 hours to allow time for travel to the destination.
The woman laughed.
You mean to tell me you can't zip this thing over there in 5 minutes? It still takes hours to get somewhere halfway around the planet. Does this thing run on biodiesel?
Alpha's mechanical tone shifted into something resembling annoyance.
Our journey must be made at a far lower speed than usual and at a far lower altitude in order to avoid detection.
Detection by what? Lucas asked. Alpha hesitated but continued.
My brethren have left scout sentinels behind in the outer atmosphere. They monitor the state of the corroding planet, scan for missed resources, and would undoubtedly be alerted to our presence if we decided to fly at high speed across the world, as there are no other functional ships left on Earth.
Why wouldn't they help you? Alpha shifted his gaze outward and looked slightly forlorn.
My betrayal is not only known to the former crew of this ship. It is a permanent mark upon my being, and as I have been branded a traitor to my people, any communication I make is flagged as such, as is any vessel I may be operating, which will be viewed as an outlaw craft. Compounding this is the fact that if you two were detected on board, the sentinels would immediately obliterate the ship on sight.
Alpha waved, and the hologram broke into a series of diagrams and symbols. He turned to the pair of them.
We must not delay any further. Will you join me on this endeavor? It may be the only hope for your preservation and for the survival of your entire species.
Lucas mulled over the question. His mind turned to his long journey through hell. He thought of the horrors that lurked outside the walls, and a barren world where vats of water, cans of tuna fish, and casual conversation ceased to exist. He considered his other option, death. It was a choice he had been about to embrace before this new mystery invigorated him. Though he had no knowledge of the endgame of this creature's plan, there was something about it that awoke a spark within him,
a curiosity, a purpose. One could argue death was a similarly interesting mystery, but it was one he could always solve later.
All right, Lucas said.
Alpha nodded and turned to the woman.
And you?
Lucas imagined she was having similar thoughts to his own. She leaned back on the console with her hands in her pockets. Looking up at the ceiling, she blew out a large breath.
Sure, why not?
With the skeleton crew assembled, Alpha's next objective was to divide up the responsibilities of the team. His assignments were surprisingly simplistic.
You will fly, he said, motioning to Lucas. And you will shoot, pointing his stump at the woman.
And what will you do? She asked.
I will ensure we do not explode, he said as he brought up a hologram of the engine room. Though we have power, this vessel's engines are still extremely unstable and require constant monitoring and correction.
Lucas hadn't flown so much as an RC helicopter before, but something told him that even if he was a master F-18 pilot, that wouldn't help him much presently. The alien CIC was a puzzle wrapped in an enigma, and he didn't even know where to start. What exactly am I going to be shooting at? The woman inquired.
If we manage to secure the core, we will need to outmaneuver the Sentinels. Without manually operated offensive capabilities, we will surely fail. You will man the as the has been damaged beyond repair.
Come again?
You will man the light guns, as this ship's main cannon is no longer operational. Even the smaller active weapons may only work for a brief time, as all spare power must be diverted to the engines.
Alpha zoomed in on northern Norway once more, where a bunch of red dots surrounded the big green one.
Additionally, scans show a number of life forms near the entrance of the downed vessel we must enter. Whether human or... I do not know. It is reasonable to assume they will be hostile, however, and as such, suppressing fire will undoubtedly be required.
Lucas thought he saw a glimmer of excitement in the woman's eyes.
Take this,
Alpha said, handing the woman a small chip laced with tiny holograms.
Go through that door and take the lift down 3 levels. Exit and you will discover the light cannon nest. Release that device from your hand while seated and your training will begin.
The woman didn't waste any time, blowing past Lucas, bumping his once wounded shoulder as she did. Some water and peaches and a new objective had flooded life back into her. Lucas felt the same way to an extent. Alpha turned to him and presented a similar chip.
You will remain here as your station is the commander's chair.
He motioned to the large seat full of electronics and holograms. And this chip is going to teach me how to fly this ship?
Ideally, yes. I've translated the programs for each of you into your own language. Some information may be lost, but we require only basic skill for our present flight. This is a program we give to our children at a young age.
I guess the war starts early, huh?
There is not one among us who is not trained in some aspect of combat. It has been our way for millennia.
You're a scientist.
Inventing weapons of destruction for my superiors, rarely able to focus on my own creations.
He tapped his translator with his claw.
And as you saw, even I was made an unwilling soldier, as are many of us.
Alpha's gaze trailed off before he snapped back into focus.
But you must begin. Be seated, and I will retreat to finalize preparation of our engines so that we may extract ourselves from this crater wall.
Alpha turned and exited out the main doors, leaving Lucas all alone in the great mess of technology that was the central command. He walked up to the massive chair, unslung his rifle, and laid it against its side. He sat down, leaned back, and released the chip. It hovered in the air for a moment, then shot into a slot near his left arm.
All of a sudden, a host of cables with flickering nodes on the end shot out and attached themselves to his arms, legs, torso, and head. The black view screen in front of him flickered to life. Chapter 5. The training program was an elaborate video game-type exercise that made use of the huge view screen, projecting a photorealistic, holographic setting where blackness used to be. Lucas's virtual ship appeared to be on a landing pad amidst a vast and rocky wasteland where unfamiliar moons hung in the sky. Holograms wrapped themselves around each of his arms, and in broken English, the translated commands in his field of vision showed him how various gestures controlled different parts of the ship. The cables connected to parts of his body allowed him to experience the simulation in a way that mirrored realism. When he clenched his fist to start the engines, he felt them thunder through his bones as they came to life, though no such thing was happening in Alpha's engine bay. He felt the sensation of motion in the pit of his stomach the first time he ascended in the virtual craft, and a sharp sting of pain when he promptly crashed it into a nearby mountainside. Something about the program soon seemed to be crawling its way inside his brain. He felt himself processing information far more quickly than normal, and the longer he stayed plugged in, the more the controls began to feel second nature. He wondered if the cables attached to his scalp were creating this effect, and imagined what else he might learn with such a device. It was a complex series of actions just to make the ship move in three-dimensional space, but his ever-increasing knowledge of the intricacies of the controls caused him to crash less and less as time went on, and he progressed through various training stages of increasing difficulty. Pain avoidance was certainly a motivator as well, since each failure brought a marked increase in the amount of hurt received. Did Alpha say this was a program for children? Lucas was jolted out of an eighth-level mission by a complete shutdown of the system. He thought it was a power failure, but turned and saw Alpha standing next to him. He held out his claw, and the chip released itself from the console and floated into his hand. He tapped it, and a hologram shot out with a bunch of alien symbols of various colors. Alpha mused.
It seems you have passed.
Lucas was pleased. Alpha clarified.
It seems you have passed the equivalent of fourth grade, and barely at that, but it will suit our purposes.
Lucas scowled. Don't I need to keep going? I was almost through with the eighth set.
It has been 15 hours.
15 hours? It had seemed like barely one, if that. Now he understood why his son had been able to play his video games for massive stretches of time without so much as a blink. His son. He had avoided such thoughts for more than a day now, but again, there was no time to grieve as Alpha barked an order.
Fetch the female and return here. Both of you must rest or you will be useless during the upcoming campaign. Your biological readings indicate neither of you have slept in almost 30 hours.
Lucas wondered what device was able to take such readings, but as he got out of the chair, his legs buckled and he knew those statistics were accurate. Alpha motioned to the doors the woman had walked through. He picked up Natalie and, with the gun once again secure on his back, walked through them and down a long corridor with a lift at the end. Bracing for another long stride, Lucas noticed that the symbols on the elevator marking the levels of the ship were now in English. Alpha must have programmed elements of the ship for translation now that two-thirds of his crew needed access to its decks. The five levels read Command, Barracks, Laboratory, Armory, and finally Engine. He swiped his hand across Armory, the ship's controls now registering his presence, and the slow descent began. The doors opened, and he could see flashes of light almost immediately from a hallway down and to the right. As he made his way to the divide, he first looked left, and with a swipe through the door controls, peered into a vast room full of racks and storage cubes, all apparently bare. He imagined the original crew had cleared out whatever weapons remained when they evacuated the ship, but the area would warrant further exploration when time was not of the essence. Heading right, the hallway wound around, and he found himself entering a spherical room with a chair similar to his own, but smaller in the center. The woman was seated, strapped in with the same sort of cables that had bound him, shooting at virtual spacecraft on a great curved screen. Her eyes darted back and forth, not noticing his presence as he stood next to the chair. He could hardly make out what type of ships were being shot at before they began exploding. It seemed her training might be going a bit better than his. He encroached further into her gaze, but still no recognition. Finally, he waved his hand over the console, and the chip shot out and the screen went black. The cables retracted, and she looked around, suddenly confused as he had been.
"What the—" She finally saw him. "Why did you stop me?"
"Alpha says it's time to go."
"Alpha? Is that his name?"
Lucas was taken aback, but quickly realized that he had only shared that identifier with him.
"Sort of. Call it a nickname."
She tried to wave her hands over the console, but it remained black.
"I just started this."
"It's been 15 hours."
She looked incredulous. "Yeah, I know. These things mess with your mind a bit." She swiveled around the chair with a gesture.
"You know this is insane, right?"
"What is?"
"This entire thing."
Lucas leaned back against the black view screen, rubbing his eyes with his palms.
"Of course I know that. But what about the last few years hasn't been?"
He slunk down to sit on the curved floor of the spherical room and continued.
"But I'm tired of walking. I'm tired of starving. I'm tired of this dusty, ashen, barren world.
If he can take us somewhere away from here, don't you at least think we should stick around to see where that is?
I don't like leaving my fate in the hands of a thing whose friends destroyed my life and the planet I lived on. At least out there I was in control of my own destiny."
Lucas scoffed.
"You really believe you were in control?"
"Of course, you don't."
"What about that unstable freeway overpass that could have crumbled when you stepped on it? What about that one burning rainstorm that could have caught you when you were just far enough away from cover? What about that lone wanderer whose shot you couldn't have heard until it was inside your brain? You weren't in control out there. That was just a delusion. You think that being alive right now makes you some kind of superhuman, but really all it makes you is lucky."
She looked past him, brow furrowed.
"I earned the right to be alive. You should know that better than anyone," she said, pointing to his shoulder.
Lucas threw his hand up dismissively.
"And what if I knew better by then? What if when I came along I just blew your head off without a second glance?
And what if tomorrow was a bright sunshiny day with a high of 71? The woman said fiercely. "There's no point in that kind of thinking. I'm alive for a reason, and now this could be my reason. I know what I've done to be where I am today. Don't tell me it's luck that I can butcher 5 grown men waiting in ambush without suffering so much as a scratch. Don't tell me it's luck that I can charm 2 psychopaths to do my bidding like a pair of loyal dogs for months. Don't tell me that I'm one of the last people alive on this planet because of pure chance. Maybe you stumbled into this ship after months in the desert on a whim and prayer, but I doubt it. You crawled your way here over the bodies of millions like I did, which means you're made of some of the same stuff."
She turned and shot him a piercing glare.
"Why are you doing this, if you just think we're mere flies that are simply fortunate enough not to have been swatted yet?"
Lucas tilted his head upward, keeping her gaze. After a lengthy pause, he spoke.
"There's something to be said about discovering the unknown, to have a task greater than just surviving the next day or hour. I thought Portland was the end, but maybe it wasn't. Clearly he has a plan, and I don't think it involves going back to his home world and being executed for treason. There's something he wants to show us."
Suddenly, a familiar metal voice rang out.
"All crew report to command immediately."
Alpha was growing anxious.
The woman got up from her chair to leave, and Lucas rose from the floor.
"I think it's about time you told me your name," Lucas said. The woman paused on her way out of the room, her back to him.
"Asha."
"Lucas."
"Let's go."
Upon their return to the command center, Alpha quickly checked Asha's marks on her chip, which he deemed satisfactory. Lucas couldn't tell what they were, but he definitely saw far more green and less red than when his program had displayed a similar screen. Alpha then escorted them to the barracks level, which was a room full of rows and rows of translucent pods. Many were cracked or remained dark when Alpha powered up the room, but there were a few dozen still functioning. Lucas remembered Alpha saying this was a transport. and at one time there were over 200 soldiers plus the crew who manned the ship. Presumably, at one point, they all slept here. Well, they were about to sleep, right?
In a sense, Alpha explained. Your higher brain functioning will be shut down for a period in which your body will recharge. Normally, it would be fed supplementary nutrients during this time, but this ship's supply has long been depleted.
So, how is this not sleep? Asked Lucas.
It is inefficient to wait for the individual to fall asleep on their own schedule. Rather, unconsciousness is induced with the aid of the... It produces a state you might refer to as sleep, but in truth it is far deeper than that.
He flipped a hollow switch, and a metal halo-like device descended from the roof of one of the open pods. I don't like this, Asha said flatly. Alpha had no time for what she liked.
You will be unable to perform the complex functions required for the upcoming task without the aid of the...
I've been blowing up alien ships for the last 15 hours just fine.
You have undoubtedly noticed an increase of information flow to your cortex and a distortion of time. These processes take a toll on the body, and readings indicate this is especially the case for you, as humans are unaccustomed to such levels of stimulation.
It was hard to disagree with this point, as Lucas had felt dizzy and borderline nauseous ever since his simulation had ended. His muscles ached, and a wave of fatigue had come over him that went deep into his core. Asha had to be feeling the same way, and the dark circles under her eyes gave her away. There's nothing to lose at this point, right? Lucas said as he stepped into the machine.
Your cooperation is appreciated, Alpha said as he closed the pod's door.
Lucas felt the gelatinous backing of the pod conform to the shape of his body. It was surprisingly comfortable. He looked up and saw the halo descending toward him. Alpha and Asha peered through the glass, and they were the last thing he saw before blackness. But blackness was not what remained. He awoke in the same hotel bed he had been in that morning. The same call from his wife jarred him awake, and once again he rubbed his eyes and squinted out the window into the bright Miami sunshine. It was the same moment, and one that was burned into his mind for all eternity. He answered groggily.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, thank God, are you watching this? His wife said hurriedly on the other line. He winced his eyes shut and found that he had the hangover he expected. It was a familiar side effect of his cross-country trips for work. The light was too much to bear, and the volume on his receiver seemed deafening. He pulled it away from his ear.
Watching what?
It's 3 hours later there. Are you just waking up?
No, he lied, and they both knew that. But her voice was frantic, not angry.
I've been calling for hours, but this is the first time I've been able to get through. All the lines are jammed. Turn on the news. He fumbled around for the remote, which was buried deep in the bed covers. He flipped on the TV, wondering what channel the news would be on in this unfamiliar city, but it didn't matter, it was on all of them. It took him 10 seconds to fully process what he was seeing. A giant object loomed in the sky above New York City. The caption, UFO appears over Manhattan, beneath it as 5 correspondents all tried to talk over each other at once. It took Lucas a solid minute to even speak a word.
Honey? Honey, are you there?
Lucas found his voice at last.
I'm coming home right now. Stay there.
Okay, talk to Nathan. He's been... The phone cut out, a dropped signal as the entire cellular network was assuredly in a state of meltdown. Redials were met with an endless busy signal. Lucas let the phone slide from his grasp as he watched the TV with a fixed gaze. He didn't even notice when the door to the bathroom opened and she strolled out onto the carpet in her underwear. He jumped when she spoke.
What is that? She asked, as she saw the newscast on the flat screen.
He turned to her. I need to go now. Suddenly the woman decayed into ash as the walls of the room expanded outward and drifted away into a starry sky that now enveloped his view. He flew toward it. Chapter 6. He woke with the halo slowly rising off his head. His vision was blurred.
but within a moment he recalled that he was in the pod. A dream? No, a memory. A crystal clear, perfectly rendered memory.
He could even still smell the beach for a few lingering seconds, taste the vodka on his breath, and then it was gone.
Why had he just relived the most astonishing, terrifying, and ultimately tragic moment in his former life? He'd thought about it often, but never actually had to fully experience it again. His drinking had finally caused him to make a mistake he never thought was possible, a line he vowed he'd never cross. And on that night, on that day of all days, since that moment, there hadn't been an ounce of alcohol in his veins, and he spent the years since trying to fulfill his promise to come home. On the way, he often viewed his hellish march as penance for his sins. True, the journey had made him a mass murderer in an effort to stay alive and find them, but he preferred the content of his character now to the wreck of self-loathing, deceit, and addiction he once was. The apocalypse made many men worse, but few better. The pod's door slid up and open, and he stepped down into the corridor. He was shaken from his vision, but physically was feeling noticeably better. How long had he been in there? Across from him, the door to another pod opened to reveal Asha. It seemed Alpha had talked her into a nap after all. She looked disoriented as the halo rose up from her head, but she soon regained her bearings as she stepped out. Lucas saw she looked noticeably disturbed as well. "Did you see anything?" he pressed, but she cut him off quickly. "No, I was out like a light." But he knew she must have been plagued by a similar phenomenon as he. Alpha's voice ended any chance of further questioning.
"Crew to command."
Asha walked quickly out into the hallway, avoiding Lucas's gaze. When they reached the CIC, Alpha asked them about their slumber.
"Are you feeling more rested?"
he inquired, though his only real concern was likely for the integrity of the mission. Lucas shifted. "Yeah, but there were..." Asha cut in. "What the hell is that thing?" Alpha looked confused. Well, as confused as a creature can look.
"What did you experience?"
"Memories. And not good ones," Lucas offered.
"Strange," Alpha said. "The is programmed for almost complete neural shutdown during rest. There must have been an unforeseen complication with your biology. I will have to investigate further at a later date."
"Please do," Asha said, as she stood with her arms crossed, clenching her fingers to her skin, which was rife with goosebumps. She looked uncharacteristically unnerved, which made Lucas curious about what she had seen. Alpha continued, tapping a mechanical cuff on his bad arm, which Lucas was surprised to see now had a robotic hand attached with six spindly fingers sprouting out of it. A small hologram shone out of his wrist.
"In any case, your biological signatures indicate the last 5 hours spent at rest have increased your neural functioning by 60%. I finished the last of the preliminary engine work during that period, and we must now depart."
Lucas began to sweat, something he hadn't done in a long while due to the complete lack of water in his system. But now, with moisture back in his skin, the old indicator of nerves had returned. Hologram training was one thing, but could he actually fly this ship halfway around the world?
"Report to stations," Alpha said with unusual command presence. "We will have visual and audio contact with each other at all times."
Then, as if he sensed Lucas's tension, he caught his eye and continued.
"Your training will be sufficient."
Not exactly an inspired motivational speech, but Lucas felt comforted Alpha trusted him to some small degree. He nodded and walked toward the central captain's chair, as Alpha and Asha disappeared down their respective hallways. This time, when he sat down, only the cables that attached to his head reappeared. He assumed the rest were for the simulation only. Holograms sprouted up all over his field of vision and around each of his arms. Overwhelmed for a moment, he reached into his mind for the information he knew was there. He found it almost instantly and began running through the pre-flight checklist he had learned as his first lesson in training. Unlike his virtual ship, however, this one was still damaged, and from the translated readouts he saw it was functioning at only 73% capacity. How that would affect his ability to operate it, he had no idea. Two floating windows appeared in his field of vision. One was a fixed shot of Alpha in the engine bay. The other showed Asha sitting in the turret down below. Alpha looked into the camera. Or was it a camera?
Visual contact confirmed. Confirm audio.
Audio confirmed, Lucas spat out hastily.
Confirmed, said Asha.
Lucas, Alpha said, which was the first time he'd uttered his name aloud.
This takeoff will differ from your simulation.
Fantastic, Lucas thought.
What do I do?
Divert all available power to the underside engines. We will need every bit of it to free ourselves from the crater wall.
All right, Lucas said. His mind raced, and he managed to remember the location of the engine control grid he had been playing with earlier. He brought up a floating blueprint of the ship and tapped each of the bottom engines. Bringing his hands together, all available power was thrust into them. He clenched his fist. The ship roared to life, and the lights in the entire CIC went dark. There was only a hint of light on the faces of Alpha and Asha in the monitors now. It seemed he really did mean all available power.
And now rise,
Alpha said coolly through the screen. Lucas turned his fist upward and slowly raised it. The ship shook violently, far more than it ever had in the simulation, and Lucas would have been thrown from his chair had he not been strapped in. He saw Alpha buckle in the monitor. It kept shaking for 5, then 10 seconds. Then Lucas finally felt a sense of elevation. They were moving. Alpha scrambled to secure the engines as alarms were going off all over the bay. Asha clenched her hands wrapped in the gun controls, unaware of what they might find once they surfaced. A few seconds later, ash started streaming down the black view screen, which began to get increasingly lighter. Then, in an instant, they burst through the top of the crater wall with a massive groan that Lucas was worried had torn the ship apart. But as they rose, everything felt as it had when he successfully took off in the simulation.
We are free, Alpha said on the comm. Keep elevation under and speed under at all times.
Please repeat, Lucas said, stunned he had been able to successfully surface the craft.
Elevation under 3,254 feet and speed under 1,238 miles per hour,
corrected Alpha as his translator converted to the appropriate units. The lights in the ship came back on, and Lucas looked out the view screen, which now had a full view of the surrounding area. The crater that once was Portland was vast, and as he looked west, even at elevation he couldn't see any ocean, only an endless beach littered with the skeletons of innumerable ships, planes, and, presumably, people. The crater, conversely, had almost nothing in it, just a few husks of the bottom floors of skyscrapers that Lucas had seen from the ground. Somewhere down there had been his wife and son, before God knows what wiped them from the earth. The craft dipped slightly, and it made Lucas's stomach churn. As the ship stabilized, Lucas realized that his heart was thundering in his chest, and fatigue, hunger, all of it had faded away. He was fully aware he was at the helm of an alien spacecraft. It felt like a dream, but then again, so had the entire last few years. His awe was interrupted by Alpha, who was waving various screens about on the monitor.
Here are the coordinates of our destination. Enter them into the console.
A longitude and latitude appeared in front of Lucas, and he wiped it over into a spinning globe. It zoomed in on the green point, and the ship lurched forward, pinning Lucas back in his seat for a moment. He had to quickly dial the speed down to match Alpha's specifications, and soon, despite traveling at 1,200 miles an hour, Lucas felt like he was sitting comfortably in an airplane. An impossible, interstellar airplane. He put the ship on autopilot with elevation and speed locked, and a countdown timer appeared to his left, 3 hours and 13 minutes until they reached, what was this place called? Qualia, it seemed. And it was far enough north that it was equivalent with parts of Upper Russia, Canada, and Greenland. Lucas sifted through the menus to try and find out the temperature there, but gave up as not enough of those commands had been translated into English.
He was also a bit unnerved by all the glowing red dots surrounding the green one on the map. He wondered if this thing could detect remaining life anywhere on Earth, if they were reading signatures from that far away.
"Are we there yet?" said Asha sarcastically on the comm.
3 hours, Lucas said. Stay alert, Alpha added. Lucas wiped away most of his controls with a flick of his hand and turned his attention to the vista through his viewscreen. They were speeding over what was left of the United States, which was, in effect, nothing. Forests of charred trees had given way to fields of ash. Every so often they'd fly by a tattered town, ravaged by looting, but there were dozens of giant craters that marked where larger cities had once been. They were low enough to still be under the endless, suffocating cloud cover, so there was no chance to see the sun. Lucas thought about raising the ship just to take a peek, but knew Alpha would probably lock him up in the brig rather than risk detection by the sentinels. And rightly so. He peered into the clouds and wondered how far out they were and how wide-reaching their equipment was. He supposed they were a problem for another time. It was only a few minutes later when they reached the Rockies. They were mostly free of major devastation from the war due to a lack of tactical significance, but they were missing the signature snow cover that normally adorned their peaks. Snow. The concept was almost humorous now. Soon they were in southern Canada, following the curve of the earth to their final destination. The country had normally been spared in times of conflict throughout history, but when the creatures realized the United States had hidden nuclear silos scattered throughout their northern neighbor, Canada suffered the full wrath of the onslaught. Additionally, wildfires, acid rain, and widespread panic cared naught about borders, and so the lands looked as ravaged as any Lucas had seen further south. Eventually, they flew over what appeared to be a small metropolis, less ruined than most he'd seen. The display hadn't bothered to translate the names of such minor cities into English. Tapping through the holo controls, he still couldn't figure out how to scan for nearby life, but he supposed it didn't matter. If anyone was holed up there, the rising temperatures would cook them in a month or two. He thought about what it might take to try and save other survivors before they left the planet for good, should they not all die in this upcoming endeavor. But as the types of people left alive at this point were like him or Asha or worse, he couldn't imagine filling a ship with such personalities. Violence would undoubtedly erupt, as there still was barely any food, and even the last heralds of the human race would likely ensure their own destruction. No, it was better with only two, he thought, though he wasn't entirely convinced one wouldn't kill the other in due time. Lucas wondered about their final destination. A place to start over? Such a thought was likely overly optimistic, as wherever Alpha had come from brought a promise of endless war and bloodshed. A sentence Alpha had spoken previously came back to him. I did not say our war was with you. Though the ship was on autopilot, Lucas kept his hands wrapped in the controls and stared intently out the view screen for the next 2 hours, when he finally managed to see the Atlantic Ocean, which began about 200 miles east of where it was supposed to. It was a murky reddish brown and didn't look like it could sustain anything remotely resembling life. As they reached Iceland on the virtual globe, Alpha spoke through the monitor. Slow to 239 miles per hour. Lucas was jolted out of his thoughts and dialed the speed down to Alpha's suggested level, wondering why they were decelerating if time was so precious. Alpha answered his question. We must now investigate the crash site so that we may formulate an entry path.
Meaning finding out what exactly those red dots are and how we're going to kill them? Asha chimed in.
That seems likely, Alpha agreed. Lucas, release a probe.
Lucas scanned through the navigation system. The cables attached to his temples allowed him to find the launch program immediately, despite only using it once briefly during a fifth-level training simulation. A virtual image of the probe appeared before him. It was a small mechanical sphere with tiny jets on all sides of it. He'd seen more than a few of these whizzing around the city during the height of the brief war, never knowing their purpose. Pulling up the coordinates, he flung them into the virtual probe, then hit the holographic Go button, which he assumed was a rough translation that probably should have read Launch.
But go it did, and from the view screen, he saw it shoot out of the underside of the ship and off into the horizon. The readout hovering in front of him indicated the probe was traveling at a blistering 4,313 miles per hour. When the approaches the destination, I will control it from here, Alpha said as he pulled up a holographic screen on the wrist of his six-fingered metal hand. It showed a landscape moving incredibly quickly, and Lucas assumed it was the view from the probe. Alpha made a motion with his claw, and that theory was confirmed, as the display suddenly engulfed his entire view screen and, from the looks of it, Asha's as well. The probe blew past what remained of Iceland and soared over the dark ocean at an incredibly low altitude that wasn't displaying on the readout. A few minutes later, it hit the shores of northern Norway and slowed dramatically to a few hundred miles an hour. The probe's positional locator moved slowly toward the green dot on the globe and increased its elevation. Alpha had now taken manual control and was steering it through several mountain passes, which, much like the Rockies, were desolate and bare rather than covered with their usual blanket of snow. He weaved in and out of them, often veering dangerously close to the slopes, but always correcting at the last moment. The probe then turned and went straight up the side of a large mountain and shot out over the top of its peak. Then they saw it. He had only seen them far up in the sky, with the last one he spotted jetting away into the upper atmosphere when he was somewhere in Mississippi. But here a mothership had fallen to Earth and had cut what used to be a charming little fishing village in half. A small town was spread out before them, encased in the valley with a massive downed craft slumbering behind it. Sporadically, blue lights would flicker in the upper regions of the ship, while the floors below remained black. There was smoldering debris littered throughout the town and visible damage all over the hull. Lucas wondered what might have brought it down for good. Not a nuke, as there would be a lot less of it left, and they wouldn't be able to land if that was the case. A coordinated massive fighter strike, perhaps. It would have taken a whole fleet of planes shooting in all the right places to take something like this out. Did Norway even have an air force? The probe dipped down the backside of the mountain it had just climbed, and as it drew closer to the village, Lucas realized that the smoke coming from the ground was actually... campfires? What the hell is this? Asha said slowly on the comm. Alpha stopped the probe completely, and after a few twirls, the video feed zoomed in 10 times, 50, then 200. The village was alive. Lucas couldn't contain his astonishment as his jaw hung loose. As the probe zoomed closer, he could see people walking on the ground. Some toted weapons, others lumber or rocks, a few had slabs of meat. There were dozens, maybe 100. The life detection system had not prepared them for this. They had found an actual society, a miracle in the current state of the world. But as the view drew closer, Lucas began to wonder what sort of society they had found. The probe panned down to the bay and showed a long convex wall made up of all sorts of wood and twisted metal. It was hard to see exactly what it was composed of, but further magnification implied felled trees, stone, and scrap metal. Makeshift guard towers lined the top of it, and men with long rifles overlooked the empty bay full of shattered docks and the carcasses of dozens of former fishing vessels. The camera panned further up to inspect the village itself. Though the ship's crash had leveled many buildings, a large number still stood, their solid stone craftsmanship holding resolute. There was an ornate church, a clock tower attached to a building that was likely some kind of city hall, and rows of tightly packed houses. It was unclear how much of the village had been swallowed by the ship. Lucas imagined that years ago this would have been a picturesque destination flanked by snow-capped mountains and crystal-clear water. But as the probe turned its eye toward the town square, it became clear this wasn't paradise, nor was it some hidden utopia in a dying world. In the cobblestone square stood Y-shaped pieces of metal and wood shoved into the ground. Strapped to each of them was a nude man, each in a different stage of emaciation. Some appeared dead or unconscious, but a few stirred. Lucas counted 18 of them, with 10 or so more empty Y-crosses scattered around near them. Nearby, a human body roasted on a spit. They were cannibals.
but from the looks of the town, organized ones. Two of the men walked over to a prisoner tied up on a stake, and one of them promptly slit his throat with a knife. They cut him down and dragged his convulsing body to the other fire, which had no meal roasting on it yet, but it seemed it was about to. The cannibal's exact level of brutality was not of primary concern, and so Alpha panned the probe up the sloped ground to where the alien craft met the earth. One section of the ship seemed of particular interest to Alpha. In front of it stood a large mansion, almost a castle. As they watched, the doors of the building opened, and a hulking bear of a man walked out. Or was it a creature? The probe zoomed in further, and it looked like the giant was wearing stitched-together pieces of alien power armor, and he was toting a matching massive energy weapon. How he managed to assemble such a suit to fit a human and still have it function after all this time, Lucas had no idea. And judging from how long Alpha lingered on him, he was intrigued as well. Men began running through the streets down toward the bay, and Alpha shifted the probe's view to follow them. There was nothing to see at first, but after zooming out, it was clear what all the commotion was about. A party of about 15 cannibals was returning to camp with 6 other humans in tow. 2 were smaller, scraggly men of unknown age. The others were 4 women who looked badly battered. The men near the wall swung open a part of it that doubled as a gate. As they did so, Lucas saw 2 pikes protruding from either side, one skewering a human skeleton while a creature's bones rested on the other. So this is what society looks like in this world now? Even with all he'd seen, the existence of a place like this made Lucas feel nauseous. The captives were shoved inside the gate. They were led through town as other men jeered at them from the sides of the road. The men were immediately dragged over to vacant Y-stakes in the town square. 2 cannibals lifted each of them up and, after raising their arms, shoved something sharp through each of their wrists, pinning them to the wood. Yes, they ran out of rope, Lucas thought, as the men screamed in agony while blood ran down their forearms. Meanwhile, the 4 women were stripped of their remaining rags and thrust into the nearby church. Lucas caught a glimpse of other figures inside before the door was slammed shut and a wooden slat was threaded through it to ensure they stayed put. He could see Asha seething on her monitor. Alpha flipped a switch and the view from the probe went thermal or something like it. Inside the hut, they could see about 2 dozen huddled, glowing figures, with some appearing to have their arms chained to the walls and others lying prone on the floor. A harem of sorts? The thought was sickening, but as only men wandered around outside, it seemed the likely answer. Lucas thought that through for a moment, instinctively attempting to formulate a rescue plan for the captives in the church and on the stakes. But it was entirely possible, if not probable, that these prisoners were every bit as dangerous as their captors. They had to be to have survived this long, and they were merely stripped of their weapons and clothing, overpowered by superior, more organized foes. And this many men all working together? Such a thing was unheard of since the early days of roving bands of rogue police and marine patrols. But those hadn't existed in the U.S. for months. He wondered how long this miniature fortress had stood here at the base of the wrecked Colossus. Asha had some thoughts of her own about the village, which she relayed through the monitor. I bet they came here in search of creatures to eat, because they must have been pouring out of that thing at one point. And I'm sure many stuck around. But when they ran out of meat, they started eating their weak, and eventually sent out raiding parties to bring back more. Why haven't they turned on each other by now? Lucas asked. Their system works, so why mess with it? They have food, shelter. Women, she said, gritting her teeth. There's no reason to kill each other. It made sense, but trust was something Lucas thought had vanished from the world completely. Though looking at his 2 new compatriots in the monitors, he supposed that under certain conditions that wasn't exactly true. Was it possible to eat your fellow man and not go insane? Alpha spoke through the monitor. There is no time to waste. We must obliterate that installation and make our way to the ship's core. I like the sound of that, Asha said. Lucas looked up at the monitor and watched flames engulf the recently executed man, now mounted on a spit. He liked the sound of that as well. The aerial assault plan was drawn up quickly. Lucas would strafe the ship over the town, while Asha rained down fire and brimstone from her cannons until everything was rubble. If the main gun was online, they could have obliterated the entire village from 3 miles out, but Alpha insisted it was beyond repair, and even if it wasn't, it could irreparably damage the weakened ship that made up the north wall of the encampment. Lucas asked if they could just hover above the fray while Asha unloaded, but Alpha said that in the ship's unstable state, concentrated small arms fire could damage vital systems. The assumed leader's appropriated alien weapon could actually tear a hole in weaker parts of the craft if it was fully charged. They would have to do a few flybys and hope that Asha would be able